So when you hear labor strike, what pops into your head?
Picket lines, probably.
Definitely.
It's confrontation.
Exactly. You know that classic image, workers versus management, a real direct clash right there on the line.
Yeah, that's definitely the common picture. It feels very us versus them.
But what if I told you there is another player involved? Someone, well, kind of behind the scenes and maybe unexpected, who actually helps balance things out, even, believe it or not, potentially helps protect the rights of the striking workers themselves.
It's definitely not just a simple two-sided fight. And that's really what we're getting into today in this deep dive.
Okay.
We're looking at strike staffing agencies, you know, the companies that bring in temporary workers during a strike.
Right. The ones you immediately think are just there to help the company keep the doors open, undermine the strike, maybe.
Well, yeah, that's the surface view. But our mission here is to figure out how these agencies, kind of surprisingly, can actually end up contributing to protecting employee rights.
For everyone involved, you mean, not just the company they're working
For
for.
all parties, yeah. And promoting fair labor practices generally, it's more complex than it looks.
Okay, that's the core puzzle then. How can an entity that, helps companies during a strike actually, well, be a force for protecting worker rights? It feels backwards, doesn't
Yeah,
it?
absolutely does seem counterintuitive at first glance.
So let's unpack that. We've got some really interesting source material to draw on here.
And to really get it, I think we have to start with the basics, the legal foundation.
Which is the National Labor Relations Act, the NLRA.
Exactly. Or, as it's often called, the Wagner Act.
Right. That goes way back to 1935, part of the New Deal. So, not exactly new legislation.
Not at all, but it's still the absolute bedrock of private sector labor law in the U.S.
So, what was its main goal? Just stopping strikes?
No, not at all, actually. Its primary purpose, and this is key, was to protect the rights of both employees and employers.
Both sides. Okay.
Yeah, and to encourage collective bargaining. It was also designed to sort of cut down on labor practices from either side, really,
Yeah.
that were seen as harmful to the general welfare. Think disputes affecting the whole economy.
Okay. So it's broader than just one company's fight.
Much broader. And understanding that protective legal context is, well, it's essential for these strike staffing agencies. It defines the lines they absolutely cannot cross.
And who enforces those lines? That's the NLRB, right? The National Labor Relations Board.
That's them. They're the independent federal agency set up by the act itself.
Kind of like the referees in this whole process.
That's a great way to put it. Their job is enforcing the act, investigating complaints
Complaints about what specifically?
about unfair labor practices, which we'll get into. They also conduct hearings, make rulings, and they oversee union elections too.
So, like, if a company fires someone just for talking about forming a union,
That's a classic example of a potential unfair labor practice, or a ULP. The NLRB would investigate that.
and they could order the company to rehire the worker.
Yes, among other remedies. They're the mechanism that gives these rights real teeth. Yeah.
Okay, makes sense. So let's talk more about those rights and the things that are prohibited under the NLRA. What does it actually guarantee for employees?
Well, the big ones our sources point to are the right to self-organization,
Meaning.
meaning workers can decide for themselves if they want to form, join, or help out a union. It also guarantees the right to bargain collectively through representatives they choose themselves.
Okay, so organizing and bargaining.
And crucially, the right to engage in what the act calls concerted activities.
Concerted activities sounds a bit vague.
It's intentionally broad. It covers things like striking, picketing, or, you know, other group protests about wages, hours, or working conditions. Basically, workers acting together for mutual aid or protection.
Gotcha. And the flip side of these rights are the unfair labor practices, the ULPs you mentioned.
Exactly. These are the specific actions that the NLRA forbids because they interfere with those rights.
So what can employers not do?
Well, they can't interfere with, restrain, or coerce employees in the exercise of their organizing rights. They can't dominate or illegally assist a union. They can't discriminate against employees for union activity. And maybe most importantly for our discussion,
Yes.
they can't refuse to bargain collectively in good faith with the union that represents their employees.
And are there ULPs for unions too? It's not just one-sided.
Oh, absolutely. Unions also have rules. They can't coerce employees to join, for instance, or cause an employer to discriminate against an employee. And that duty to bargain in good faith, that applies to unions just as much as employers.
What does good faith actually mean in practice? Just showing up.
it's more than that. It means really engaging in the process, meeting at reasonable times, discussing proposals, having a genuine intention to reach an agreement, not just, you know, surface bargaining or using stalling tactics.
Okay, so it's about the intent behind the negotiation.
Precisely. The NLRA demands that genuine effort from both sides. And our sources also mention that the Act lays out procedures for handling disputes when bargaining breaks down, like strikes or lockouts. And the NLRB is often involved in trying to resolve those, too.
All right, so we've got the legal landscape, the NLRA, the NLRB rights, and ULPs. Mm-hmm. Now let's get back to the main thread, these strike staffing agencies.
Right.
How do these companies, whose business is literally supplying replacement workers during a strike, navigate all this? How do they end up, as you said, potentially upholding worker rights? It still feels like a tightrope walk.
It absolutely is a tightrope. And one of the most crucial ways they contribute, maybe the foundational one, is through maintaining compliance with labor laws.
Okay, compliance. What does that involve for them specifically?
It's huge. They're not just dropping off workers. They have to ensure their entire operation follows all the relevant laws. Think wage and hour laws.
Like minimum wage, overtime.
Exactly. For the replacement workers they supply, mm-hmm. they also have to adhere to workplace safety standards, OSHA regulations, things like that. And really importantly, anti-discrimination laws.
So they can't discriminate in hiring these temporary workers based on race, gender, age, anything like that.
Correct. And here's the subtle but important point our sources emphasize. This rigorous compliance does more than just protect the agency and the company from lawsuits.
How so?
By sticking strictly to these legal standards for the replacement workers, they prevent the company from using the strike as an opportunity to, let's say, drastically lower labor standards or ignore safety rules.
I see. So they kind of set a floor.
Exactly. They set a baseline based on existing law. This indirectly protects the striking workers' position, too, because it makes it harder for the company to argue for significantly worse terms later. And it upholds standards for temporary labor generally. It's an interesting dynamic. Their ethical operation can, paradoxically, buttress labor's position.
That's a really fascinating point. It's not just about the immediate conflict. Okay, what's another way they contribute?
Well, this one feels even more counterintuitive, but it's about supporting the right to organize and bargain collectively.
Wait, how can an agency hired by the company support the right to organize? Aren't they inherently on the company side?
They're contracted by the company, yes. But legally, they must respect the workers' fundamental rights under the NLRA. This means they shouldn't interfere with any efforts by workers, including potentially their own temporary workers, to form or join a union.
So they can't, like, actively try to stop union talk among the replacements?
No, they absolutely shouldn't. Nor should they do things that undermine the striking employee's collective bargaining power beyond simply providing the temporary labor itself. That's... For example, they shouldn't intimidate or coerce replacement workers into saying they'll never join a union.
Or make promises like, stick with us and you'll get a permanent job if the union loses.
Exactly. No threats or promises based on union involvement. It's a very delicate balance. Fulfill the contract with the company, but do not become an illegal tool for union busting or undermining fundamental worker rights. It really highlights the complexity of their role.
Okay. That makes sense, legally speaking. What about the replacement workers themselves? They're walking into a tough spot.
They really are. And that brings us to the third pillar, ensuring the fair treatment of replacement workers.
Why is that important, beyond just being decent?
Well, firstly, these workers have rights too. The agency has a responsibility to make sure they're treated fairly. This means giving them clear, accurate info about their own rights and responsibilities in this very unusual situation.
Like what to expect, maybe. Safety protocols around picket lines.
Precisely. Ensuring they get fair pay and any promised benefits. Providing support if they face challenges, like harassment, which can unfortunately happen. But it's also about the bigger picture,
which is
the integrity of the whole process. If replacement workers are treated terribly, if they're exploited or put in unsafe conditions, it just pours fuel on the fire. It makes the dispute more bitter, potentially longer, and harder to resolve constructively. Fair treatment helps maintain maybe a degree of professionalism in a really tense time.
So treating replacements fairly isn't just about them. It actually helps manage the overall conflict.
I think that's a fair assessment, yes. It helps prevent the situation from deteriorating further.
Interesting. Is there a final aspect to how these agencies operate?
One more thing our sources touch on is, perhaps more subtly, promoting dialogue and conflict resolution.
How can a staffing agency promote dialogue? They're not mediators.
No, they're not mediators in the formal sense. Eh? But think about it. by ensuring compliance, by treating workers fairly, by operating transparently about the terms for replacement workers, and by actively not engaging in inflammatory or illegal tactics, they can help create conditions where productive communication between the company and the union is maybe slightly more possible. They're not directly involved in the talks, but by maintaining a certain level of legal and ethical conduct, they prevent their own actions from becoming another major barrier to resolving the underlying dispute.
So they avoid escalating things further, which might indirectly help talks get back on track eventually.
Exactly. It's about not making a bad situation worse, and in doing so, perhaps keeping the door open just a crack for resolution.
Okay. So wrapping this all up then, if we think about what this means for you, the listener, it sounds like these strike staffing agencies are much more than just scab suppliers, as they're sometimes called.
That term carries a lot of historical weight, but yeah, their role is far more regulated and complex today. By operating within the NLRA framework, by focusing on compliance, respecting organizing rights, ensuring fair treatment, they actually contribute to a more, let's say, structured and legally grounded labor market, even during strikes.
So their function isn't just filling jobs. It's, in a way, upholding certain labor principles during these really difficult times.
I think that's right. They act as a sort of necessary component within the legal system governing these disputes, ensuring certain baseline rights and standards are maintained for everyone involved, the strikers, the replacements, and even setting boundaries for the company.
It's an unexpected role, acting almost like an anchor, ensuring things don't drift completely outside legal and ethical norms during the storm of a strike.
Well, that's a good analogy. They help keep things tethered, in a sense.
All right. So to leave you with something to think about, considering this complex balancing act these agencies perform and the whole evolving nature of work and labor relations, what other innovative approaches or maybe extra safeguards could we imagine? How might we better protect the rights of all workers striking, replacement, gig workers, everyone drawing lessons from how these agencies navigate the tricky intersection of business needs and fundamental labor rights, even beyond just strikes?